wanna tell you my guy, you know my style. You know the chest, then it's all up, baby. If you say you get the man, then you wanna try. You could go die, baby, baby. It's been a landslide for a long time, but then no one believe it. All of wanna come back, yeah, you wanna try. But you do harm if it's easy.
You are listening to A Penny and a Peswa, a podcast hosted by Ursula Imra.
Trendybeats.com.
Julie, I bring the thunder like Moody. They say I'm on drugs, give me a Moody. But everything they talk, they know they do me. That's not because me, I be spooty. Before my life changed, I lived in a movie. Used to roll with the shank just like Julie. Still fuck God cause I'm unruly. Beat my case cause I'm unruly. Took my place as the shine, shine bumper of the Nigerian Rudy. Because I'm way too big.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of A Penny and a Peswa. You are listening to episode 4, season 2, and I am your wonderful host, Ursula. Today, we are going to be talking about something very interesting, a topic that many people have asked me to talk about. We are discussing being a Black student on a predominantly white campus or in a predominantly white institution. Now, this term, PWI, is used a lot, but then I decided to do some digging and look for the proper definition of the term. So a predominantly white institution is a term used for a higher education institution in which white students account for 50% or greater of the student enrollment. Now, if you know something about the U.S., you would know that most institutions, most higher education institutions in the U.S. are predominantly white. And as a Black student who goes to a predominantly white institution, I think my experience is a different college experience. And a lot of you have asked me to share that with you. And I am excited to do that. And I brought some special guests to help me do that because I thought that it would be good to get the perspective of other students who possibly go through the same struggles that I do. So I'm going to have the guests introduce themselves, which is probably taboo in the podcasting world, but, you know, we do things a little bit differently here. So if you guys want to introduce yourself, I'll go by who's first on my list, which is Met.
Oh, yeah. Hi, my name is Metembe Invalifa. I'm a sophomore here at Peter, and I'm a biology major.
All right. And then where are you from?
Oh, yes. I am from a city called Bulawayo. So that is north of South Africa. And apparently it's in Zimbabwe. So.
And then Faydan.
Hello. My name is Faydan Urokondo. I am a junior political science major. I'm originally from Lomé, Togo. And I also live in Minneapolis.
All right. And Lydia.
Hey guys, I'm Lydia. I'm a senior at Luther studying business management, and I'm from Abuja, Nigeria.
Okay, and then Alain.
Hi, I'm Alain Ishimne. I'm from Burundi and Rwanda, and I'm a junior at Luther College, majoring in physics, majoring in mathematics.
All right, so those are our wonderful guests today. I'm really excited for the questions. We're going to go in the same order in which you guys introduced yourselves, unless someone feels strongly that they want to answer first. So for our first question regarding this topic of being a Black student and attending a PWI, I would like to know, how comfortable are you moving around campus or town? Excuse me. And what are some specific experiences you've had on campus or in town that made you self-aware of your Black identity?
Hmm. and I think I'm supposed to go first.
Yes.
But it's tough to sort of like pin down one specific incident where you were made aware of who you are, and to try and sort of like align it to everything Luther related. But I will say that, you know, being in a PWI, as you said, it's in itself, it just makes you aware, and perhaps it also makes you very cautious and alert as a person. You know, sometimes you also try to take some interactions, and you're already in defense mode, which is the unfortunate thing about being in a place like this, because not every interaction becomes organic. You know, everything has to come at a level where you sit down and you think, is it possible that there's a negative connotation to what that person said, or is there something behind it? But so far, I think one area that, or should I say one incident that made me really aware was over this past summer, because I was renting an apartment downtown, and the elections were like getting closer and closer. So we had a lot of people who were, you know, trying to campaign for both sides of the aisle, and just being in that environment where you didn't see a lot of people were advocating for the other blue side, I guess. Just walking around town and seeing a lot of people were advocating for the different side, you know, it just made me more alert and more subconscious about whoever I interacted with whenever I was walking around town.
Right. Be done. You want to share your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, very similar to what Matembe was saying. I believe that there is no real moment in which you're not aware of your blackness, especially at a PWI. You know, it's something that, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you're aware of it, regardless of where you are in the classroom, wherever you are, you understand that, you know, being a black student means that you're looked upon differently, and you have to act a different way or in certain ways in order to navigate your way through school. So there's many approaches to this, and, you know, everyone has their way of doing it. But, I mean, personally, there's no real getting used to it. But, I mean, I've lived in Minneapolis. I went to a predominantly white high school. So, like, I've sort of become, you know, let's say not really comfortable, but I've realized that this is what my role is in the school, in which I know that I am not going to see a lot of people who look like me, think like me, act like me. So it's about finding those people around you who do make you comfortable and, you know, make you feel like you can show who you are and be comfortable in a space in which you're not really made to be that comfortable. Yeah. I can't really pinpoint one exact moment that really hit me. But there's been many multiple moments in the classroom, on the soccer pitch, or just being around people and just figuring out the best way to deal with that.
Right. And you did mention that you're an athlete. We will be getting back to that sector of the conversation later on in the episode. But Lydia, I would like to hear your thoughts as well.
Sure. So for me, coming from Nigeria, everybody's black. So, like, we don't really have white people, and you're not reminded every day that you're black, you know? So I think the first time I really realized that I was black in America was in my freshman year, when the KKK and the whites only, like, events took place, and then a lot more stuff happened, and I talked to a lot of international students, and they said, oh yeah, I'm not alone and stuff like that. And in regards to going downtown and around campus, I feel safer going downtown than even going from Miller to Marty's at like 10 p.m. because it just feels like community members are a lot more welcoming and I feel safer around them than actual Luther students, because it's at Luther that I've seen more of the racist experiences, more of people wearing their Blue Lives Matter and MAGA merchandise and stuff.
All right. Thank you for sharing. And then, Alain, we would love to hear from you.
Okay, so I was saying, like Lydia said, I'm from Burundi and Rwanda. And where we come from, you know, most people are black, and we don't really look at identity as being black. Because everybody is black. And even though I went to UWC, I went to the UWC, the one in Swaziland, the one where most people are black too. So yeah. I never felt like I was minority because of my skin. So I think in America, what struck me the most was just being in a community where the majority, which means the norms, you know, what's viewed as standard, how teachers interact with students is more of things that white people only, relate to, you know, me, I did not. And, you know, so I think that's the general setting. Like Metembe said, it's hard to pin down exactly what made you self-aware of your blackness. But I can recall a few events, for example, you know, me and Kovenda used to talk about how some of these students react when they see you in the hallways or the bathrooms, for example. They feel there is a fear you see in them. There is a sense of uncomfortability that you don't see when they just meet, when they are just all white. But the moment you step in as a black person or somebody from, you know, another part of the world, you just sense a sense of fear and uncomfortability in their eyes and the way they react. You know, so that's maybe one event I can recall. But generally speaking, is the fact that you are in a community where the standard is being white, because most people are white. When the emails are sent by Luther authorities, it addresses looking at, you know, what most people interact with, what most people relate to, and not necessarily our experiences. And maybe we'll talk about this later, but generally speaking, that's what I can say that has made me feel like, oh, I'm literally actually a minority here.
Thank you all very much for opening the conversation with your responses. Just going back a little bit on what either Fedan or Metz had mentioned earlier, I don't know who said it. You had spoken about a black community. So just going back to what either Met or Fedan had said earlier about having a black community on a PWI, I wanted to get everyone's opinion on the importance of finding a black community in a PWI. Is it important? Is it not important? Is it let me know what you think. Let's hear from you.
Matembe, do you want this or should I?
Yeah, I can go ahead. I think it's really important. You know, I think representation in itself is very important anywhere you go, you know, and you realize the importance of it once you actually need it, you know. Like, we come from different ethnic groups within our countries, and perhaps by the fact that we're all black and we're all registered to one nationality, we don't really think further about whether we need a certain group that actually addresses who we are in particular. But once you get to a place like this, where you actually see that, yeah, you cannot run away from the fact that you're different, but there's also other people who are different with you, I think that becomes very important. So I would say, for me, having an international community like that, it actually gives you a sense of belonging in a place where one might think that maybe this is not my place, you know. And everybody wants to belong, you know. That's my opinion, at least. And to get people who are as welcoming and people who can actually relate to your struggles and your achievements and your successes, I think it becomes so much better compared to a place where you really have to come and start from scratch and deal with all the culture shock and all the criticisms and all this new stuff that's around you. So I think it's important.
Yeah. And, you know, another aspect of that is about like the shared experiences that you have when you're within people that know you and understand sort of how you grew up and stuff. So that Black community, especially in the PWI, is so important, especially like mentally, like for your mental health. Because what makes like the white students here comfortable is the fact that they have white students around them who have experiences and then they can talk to and understand. And what makes school in general so hard for Black students mostly is the fact that if you don't have that community around you, you're always going to feel like the odd one out. So even if you're accepted by, you know, the white students around you, you have your white friends and all that stuff, right? There's always that in the back of your mind where you're like, yeah, these people like me, these people are inclusive to me, but they don't really know me. They don't understand me as a person, right? So, like, and I think I'm a good example of this in general. Like, I live with Kel, who's a white student, and he, like, I've known him all my life. Like, we've been neighbors for years. We went to the same high school and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes I'm like, even though Kel knows me very well, Kel, I don't feel as comfortable as I do when I hang out with the likes of, you know, you or Tembe or Tinashe and all those other students, because I know regardless of how long I've known Kel doesn't have those shared experiences that I have of being an African American or Black in America type stuff.
And just very quickly, I wanted to highlight something Metembe had mentioned. You spoke about an international community as, I don't want to say as opposed to a Black community, but then I think that's something I would like us to talk about a little bit more later on, or maybe in another episode, if that's a possibility. But yeah, Lydia or Alain, if any of you have any contributions, we would love to hear it.
Alain, you can talk. I'm good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Metembe and Fedon have talked, most of it. You know, what I can add is having a community, everyone, like Metembe said, the belonging part, you know, Fedon saying you want to relate to someone, feel like you can be comfortable around them because they can relate to you. Sometimes also it comes with pressure because we have never been in a situation like that. You know, I have never been in a situation where I have to create a group just because we are Black and African. I've never been in that position wherever I went. So when we do that, sometimes it can create pressure on some others because we all have biases on what we think means being Black or what we think means being African. So sometimes, although it's good to have this group, it's good to have a conversation around this topic because sometimes it comes with general assumptions, or you don't sound African, or you don't sound Black, you know. So, and it makes some Black people uncomfortable. They be like, oh, this is a Black community. I feel like I don't like these people, although they are Black, because they don't, you know. So like, I'm virtually speaking, you know, of other people's experiences here. Right? But you see, although it's good, but it comes with the complexity of it, because we've never been in that setting. You know, most of us, we've never been in that setting where we have to relate and engage based off our skin or culture in that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because when you actually make friends back home, it's because you generally are friends. Like, you relate on personal levels. But here, now you start connecting first by culture, first by, you know, where you come from, the color of your skin. You even tend to be nice to each other because you're all black. It's a good thing, you know, like, you know, the pros of it they talked about. But I want to highlight the issues that might come with it and maybe shine light on those issues later.
Yeah. I really like the fact that you brought up, you know, the struggles within the Black community on the PWI itself. I think it's such a broad topic that it would really make like a good discussion for later on. Again, we'll see. But I'm going into the second question. Has there ever been a time when you felt tokenized amongst your friends in the classroom, downtown? Yeah, who wants to go first? Or do we want to skip this question? Do we want to go and come back?
I can do it. I mean, the thing is with tokenism, right, is really understanding when to label something as tokenism, right?
Yeah.
So when you have moments in which, you know, your white friends are using you as, you know, they're out to be, oh yeah, look at me, look at my black friend, I'm chilling. But sometimes it's like unconscious tokenism.
Yeah.
In a way where, you know, they're trying to be inclusive, but it comes out and it looks like, oh shit, you know, this person, oh sorry for my language.
It's okay, go ahead.
Using me, you know, to either boost them and do that. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about me being an athlete later on, but this is something that I've noticed, especially on the team playing with these men, because, you know, in front of like coaches or people that like are going to the team, you know, you have white teammates look at me and try to, like, you know, buddy up to me and yeah, good stuff. But I know for a fact when we get off the pitch and we get off where we're not where around where coach is going to see us, I'm not going to be the first person they call when they want to have, I don't know, their little get togethers or whatever it is. So it's that double meaning, which is like, yeah, you are using me to benefit you, but I know I'm not at the level that you're trying to, you know, portray towards me.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. Does anybody else have anything to add in terms of tokenism?
Different from Faith Dan, like, I don't really have that much like exposure to white people on a daily basis, apart from the fact that like I go to school with a lot of them and like we're in class, but like with teams or like where I work at SICE, like basically everybody there is black apart from Josh and Clara and stuff. And like the places where I've been tokenized, definitely like in class when they're reading the thing around your neck by Chimamanda, and I am Nigerian, so every single chapter that they're reading, I am meant to answer at least 5 questions. It was basically like an interview, right?
Yeah.
They read it, they ask questions, like nobody else was participating in class, and I was really the only person. And that was now really hard because Chimamanda is not from the same place as I am. I've never had that many experiences with like Igbo people generally.
Yeah.
I'm from the north. I went to school in the southwest, which is where Yoruba people are. I can't even say I can speak for Yoruba or Hausa people. So it just felt very like, wow. Like, I am black as hell. and the disappointing part is when I first joined that class, like, nobody came to sit with me. And this wasn't even, like, school hadn't started. This was orientation. No one came to sit with me. They left, like, two seats to my right, two seats to my left. Like, nobody at all. They went and they all gathered together. And I'm like, wow. And they didn't even know each other at that time.
Well, Yeah, wow. Then I don't know what to say. Alan or Met, do you have anything you want to add to this section of the conversation?
Well, I think just to pick out from what Faye Dan said, she talked about not pinning it down as tokenism.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like being a point of reference, I think it's one of the biggest things, and I think that's what Lydia was summarizing there. You know, where you are expected to be in a position of, like, you know, and knowledge authority, as if Google is on a pay per month type of thing. So I think it's more that where you are being referred to as if you know everything and you have to be the only person who has the know-how. You know, I think it's one of the biggest ones. But as far as being like targeted to represent a specific group, I don't think I have personally experienced that, you know. But you know, there might be bigger agendas, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say I have experienced that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what Fedon, I think Fedon spoke a lot. This happens a lot in athletes as well. I've seen that a lot. But like Lydia said, it comes off with expectations of who you think I am. For example, if I can give an example that just shines light on this topic. I remember introducing to some members of the staff, of the faculty, you know, you sometimes you hear them say, when you mention that you are from, you know, Burundi, Rwanda, Africa, now all of a sudden they start saying, I'm from Nigeria. I went to Zimbabwe last time. So sometimes they even ask you to know the person, and I'm like, I mean, I don't know how far you think, how big you think Africa is, but it's quite big. So even Burundi myself, I cannot speak on everyone, you know. So it comes with expectations, or that Metembe said, as if I'm Google now, I'm the ambassador. Yes, I am an ambassador. I will represent my country, no doubt about it. But, you know, these expectations that you won't hold on students from Minneapolis, for example, you know, Wisconsin, you don't hold these expectations on them. So that they speak for the whole community they come from. But, you know, it's tough. You know, I'm just talking. You know, it's really tough that to really pin down exactly what tokenism is.
Yeah. I definitely feel you guys. I think I personally find it difficult to identify when, excuse me, I've been tokenized in the past. Sometimes it usually happens and I realize like a week after. But no, yeah, everything you guys have said is completely, I agree with everything. It's completely true. Another side question or follow-up question, which I kind of picked from our conversation earlier. How do you deal with microaggressions that you experience regularly or daily, or not, maybe not how you deal with it or how you handle them, or just how you approach them? How do you navigate that? Whoever that was, you can go first. Obviously.
Personally, first of all, I just say, when the election happened and Trump lost, I was personally one of those people who was very excited for regular racism to come back.
Oh, great.
That included microaggressions, you know, because during the Trump era, you know, microaggressions kind of went away. It was just kind of just
direct,
you know. But now microaggressions are back. So you got people like, oh, your hair is so nice. Right. Can I touch it? You speak so eloquently. What? How do you? What? So, like those things. I mean, I've had my share of microaggressions, a ton, all throughout my life, and it's gotten to the point where, you know, sometimes they're just so laughable. They just have to use. If you take it to college all the time, it's going to mess with your brain and it's going to make you worse off. And what you got to remember is, like, at this point, they should know better, but they don't. And you got to realize a lot of the white people, especially at school and just all around the world, they have this blissful ignorance in which they are not required to go and learn about these things like microaggressions. They're not required to go out of their way and do it, you know? If they want to, what it's like to interact with a black person, if you want to interact with someone who's not a white person, right? To actively choose and strive to change and learn more. And half these people choose not to. And you can't really stop that. You can't really make that better. So to focus solely on the little things that they do to you or whatever it is, I think personally, and I might be wrong for this, it's a drawback from you actually getting to establish yourself in a community in which, you know, you're not meant to be established, you know?
So
if I'm worried about, you know, Brittany telling me I speak so well, or Timmy telling me, oh, you're so fast because you're black, or Billy out here talking about your hair is so nice, can I touch it? I'm not gonna, if I'm so focused on that, I'm not gonna worry about how I'm gonna establish myself, you know, in this community already. So,
I definitely agree with your approach. I personally, that's the approach I take, because it's like, how I can't stress over someone's actions and let it take over my entire life because they're not paying my tuition. So, but yeah, does anyone else have anything to add to what Fidan has said?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. Now, just laugh it off. Usually before it was, it would be like, or like I'll make fun of them with my friends. I mean, you know, because we're really close. But like, I remember with when I first came, people asking, is there water in Africa? Or like, do you go to a Muslim church? Or like those questions that you just...
Muslim church.
Like those questions that you just find so ridiculous. But like now I've started giving people the ridiculous answers that they're looking for. Like even more ridiculous. Do you guys have water? No. We can we do that. That's why our skin is like this. That's why we have so much melanin. Because like Peyton said, if you just take it to heart, you would just get depressed, honestly, because it will not stop happening. Like, no matter how much people read the thing around your neck or things fall apart, I just feel like there's just that ignorance that some people just can't wash off themselves.
Allah, you're going to say something.
Yes, I think I might find, I might, you know, be on a different approach from most of you guys. And it's because for me, I've been here for only 2 years, but I think being here has shown me that although, you know, we it's really about black and white or racism, it's fundamentally about humanity in general. Because I look at back home, where I come from, we don't have racism. I mean, most people are black, all of them. The whites are the ones running NGOs or working for the UN. So, but it has shown me that we have other issues, though. Back home, for example, I can tell you we have sexism, right? And and as a man, I have learned that there are things I had been normalized to view on women just because I grew up in that society that dictates me to see these things. And I think being here has opened my eyes to start questioning these issues, these ideas I had on what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, you know. So and I see women questioning me, saying, calling me out back home. So I look at these things and I say, okay, it's the same thing even here. When these white people who have been conditioned to view some people from other parts of the world certain ways, So when we collide, there's eventually going to be these kind of issues. How do we deal with them? You know, if they don't, like he says, sometimes it's a trauma, it's depressing for somebody to have to be dealing with this. But I look at it as reality of the complex reality we live in. You know, this world has issues. So when I meet with kids who think like this, I tend to make sure that when they leave me, they at least they have a chance of finding issues in what they say, you know. So I somehow, let me say, check them, you know, quotation, you know. Let me say, I check them. I for example, I met this kid. He asked me, you're from Burundi? Yes. Yeah. Do you guys have... He was surprised. How come are you here? I'm like, what do you mean? He said, aren't you guys dying of hunger or something? and I said, what told you this, you know? I started going into deep in the questioning him. And I'm not saying this is the responsibility of Black people, Africans, they should be doing. But I'm saying in a manner of, if you are really talking about dealing with these issues of stereotypical, you know, single stories that are affecting people in general. And if it's your friend, for example, let me say somebody you care about. Let me say, for example, Fedon, he is very close to Kel. If Kel happens to have issues with him, I'm sure Fedon is willing to go down and try to help him out. Say, listen,
you
don't say it. It implies this, it means this.
It's very awkward if Kel's here right now. But yeah, I check him all the time.
Okay.
Exactly. Because it comes with that idea of we are all humans, because I'm not saying this to say it's a responsibility. Uh-huh. Everybody should take this badge, and it's traumatizing. It's traumatizing people to have to explain their humanity to others. I don't think that's a call for everyone. But I'm just saying we have to measure what we are doing about it in the long term. What are we actually acting on? Because if we're going to just leave this and then go away, in class somebody might say something, and if I don't really say something, to make sure this person, you're actually saying something wrong. To make sure the kids here, when they leave, they have a chance of, let me say, viewing the world in another reality that is probably showed them that the world is bigger than what they've been taught, you know. So I see that as my role, as me being here, me being an international student from Africa. Mm-hmm. I'm here, I see it as my role to say, you know what? Yes, you have issues. Yes, you've been conditioned to view people different way, but I'm going to at least give you a chance. I don't see myself as somebody who will change you, but I'm going to make sure after you see me, after you interact with me, you see the world in another way. At least you have a chance to be different. So I won't agree with you having this, let me quotation, stupid ideologies or stereotypic stereotypes about people and me living away. I won't leave you like that. So let me say, quotation, I will check you.
Go ahead.
I mean, I think it's a big thing to just very much highlight that it's not the responsibility of Black students or international students to teach white people about microaggressions, right? Mm-hmm. Like with the situation with Kel, I know is a person who actively tries to not do the wrong thing. And if he does, it doesn't take me to tell him that it was wrong for him to realize it was wrong. So half the people that are going to do these microaggressions, right? They don't know what's wrong. That's because they didn't take the time to actually go and learn. And if you're someone, especially in a PWI, and you have that burden on top of you where it's like, oh, I need to teach them to change, that's another level of responsibility that we're giving, you know, students who don't need any more stress on themselves.
I wouldn't say, if I can add again, teach. I wouldn't say teach. Like Kovenda likes to say, I will hold onto my identity. And me. And if you think you are microaggressing me, I mean, if you are doing that, I will make sure I am being me. To for you to question yourself what you did, you know. I remember Kovenda, sometimes we talk about issues like this, and I'm not probably saying Kovenda, but let me just say in general, I wouldn't say teach, I would say be you, and because it's who you are. If somebody, for example, comes and say, oh, wow, aren't you guys dying? I would say, oh, you guys are racist too. For example, that's what I did. And they say, oh, not everyone. Oh, it's not everyone. What makes you think you're the only one who has diversity and not others? You know, things like this. It's to show you that me, I'm being me, myself. Yeah. And you will catch up. Whether you are ignorant or not, you will catch up.
Yeah.
So if a kid thinks that, for example, democracy is just something defined in America, me, I'm going to be me and talk about democracy where I come from. And you will catch up. I won't have time to. It's not really teach. Me, I'm being me and you will catch up. I don't know if I'm making sense right here, but it might sound as if I'm asking you to be sassy. Or savage, but it's not really that. It's just a moral being me, extend and hold your identity. I cannot tolerate somebody thinking that some humans are better than others and me walking away from somebody who has voiced those ideas when I'm around. I simply won't. And this is something people did. It's more than just racism. Like I said, when I take it back home, there are other issues that don't even deal with racism. But people are always encouraged to at least start a conversation, at least challenge these views. Because if you don't call it out, if you don't say this is wrong, then there's no chance of actually somebody being something good coming out or better. Because we need to call out things.
Thank you very much for the insights and your opinions. This is a very interesting topic. Unfortunately, I really want us to move to the last question, which is, what has been your experience in terms of maintaining a social life, whether it's friendships, dating, and then sports? This is where we're getting into, Fidan, your position as an athlete on the soccer team. And Alain, I know you used to be on the basketball team, if you want to share a little bit about that. And then also, if anyone wants to talk about, like, academically as well. What was the question I asked? So yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it.
I'll just jump in for a little bit.
Yes, okay.
I'll talk on the academics part.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this one line that was used by this guy, Roman, on this TV series Scandal or The Fixer. I'm not sure if you guys have seen that one.
Yeah.
He was talking to his daughter and he says, you have to realize that you have to be twice as good as them to get half of what they have. And ever since I heard that thing, that's just how I try to operate, you know, everything that I touch. I try to know that I'm in a position of disadvantage and I always have to be twice as good in whatever I do. So I apply that across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of hopping off that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. I saw that show, that line from Scandal, where it's like, it was in something around like, you have to work twice as hard to get half of what they want. And, you know, that is a powerful line, the fact that it kind of just encapsulates what it's like to be, you know, a black person in a really dominated, in like a white dominated society, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lens is always, always, always on you, and it's always on, and you have to watch the way you present yourself, the way you're moving, because one wrong move not only leads to a bad outlook on you, but all of the black community in general, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to go from a sports perspective and black community, the way I was raised, you know, when I'm playing football, like, it's aggressive, loud, it's together, it's all the time. So it's when you're playing, yelling, you know, getting on each other, that's how we play. And that's how I grew up. And I've realized while being here, whenever I become aggressive or I start talking too much or I do something, right? Mm-hmm. I've been way different from when a player who isn't black does it. When I do it, everybody is like, yo, he's crazy. He needs to relax. He's not, like, he's losing his mind. But yeah. When there's a white student that does the same exact thing, like, wow, he's passionate. He's a leader type mm-hmm. stuff. So I find myself having to check the way I act and the way I play and having to kind of shift the way I do things only because I know for a fact it's not going to be perceived the same way as others perceive other people, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a little personal. I'm having talks with coaches, and coaches are talking to me and telling me that I constantly need to change my approach to things in order to mm-hmm. fit in better on the team. And I've asked them, like, yo, why isn't it that they have to approach the way they view me? Why isn't it that they don't have to take as big of a step to come and get to know me so that they know that when I do get on them, it's not personal, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, that's just the luck of the draw. That's just how it is. So as a black student, socially, you have to go out of your way. You have to do more. And it's so unfair and it's unlucky and it's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it is on is the worst thing ever, but it's just something we've got to accept, the fact that we have to do more in order to not thrive, but just to be comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't want to say survive, but that's like a negative word, but it's just like to get a sense of somewhat comfort or stability in a place where you're not meant to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just add on what Pedon said? I mean, me and Pedon shared this very, very point because you said I was in the basketball team, and like Pedon said, you can act as you, but mm-hmm. when the moment you act as you because you are black, they have associations of you being black. For example,
I feel like all we are both black. Black, we like people being black. Slash African but, are just loud.
Mm-hmm. But then the moment you start being you,
yeah,
all of a sudden you are aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you are violent. You have to calm down. You have to chill. And you know, these are the same ideologies that make the black community in America advocate. You know, are fighting against. Yeah. Those are the reasons why we have George Floyd. You know, these associations of being black, meaning you are guilty of something already, you know. So now you have to make somebody
mm-hmm.
less fearful, you know. You have to show them that, okay, actually, I'm not that violent. Yeah. You need to show them that they should not be scared of you. And this is what we go through every day. Eh? One day, once I've been called out where I work at Martin's, some mm-hmm. white lady telling me, and I know you are too loud, I cannot operate. I told her, this is who I am. I speak her, this is also how I am, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She said she can't operate. I said, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I also can't operate if I don't speak. And I'm sorry if the way I speak mm-hmm. is making you not operate. So, it's this assumption, it's this thing we deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the basketball team, people had made it cool to talk about to everyone to say nigger, the N-word. The white people, these people from, ask Fedon in the athletics. Everybody says this word, and I was always bothered by it. I was like, some white kid calling me the N-word. I was like, what is this? So one day I confronted them, and all of a sudden the whole team was turning to me, oh, Alain, you need to calm down. Excuse me a minute. You as a white man are telling me about what it is to be called a nigger, how I should speak. Oh, you know, Alain, it's America, everybody will use this word. In Nebraska, you'll be called this. I say, please, if you call me again, I will deal with you.
No, but that was a big thing. And I handled it differently in a way with, like, my third day here, this is my freshman year, my third day, I'm in the locker room and I'm chilling and they're playing music when it has, you know, the N-word in it and stuff. And I have a player come and look at me. He's like, sort of trying to joke and see where I gauge it. He's like, you know, well, what if I said the N-word? You know what I mean? How do you feel? And I looked the man in the eye and I said, hey, if you want to say it, say it. I just can't promise what's going to happen to you.
And that's on period.
So I said this in front of everyone and in front of the whole team. And that's, and that standard was set right then and there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah. And it's when you say it like that, you're like, go ahead. You have the ability to do it. The question is, are you going to be a morally sound person? Are you going to be a good person to understand the connotation that comes with you being a white person and saying that word in that environment? Are you going to be mature enough? Are you going to have the mental stability to be able to say it, to be able to not say it and actively choose to not be racist, right? Like mm-hmm. the whole topic of everything that's going on right now is not, don't be a bystander. It's not, no, it's not a visit. It's like, it's not just okay to not be racist. You have to actively be anti-racist.
Yeah.
That's how you become a good white ally. You have to actively be anti-racist. Mm-hmm. You are going to act to do something. You got to think, does it make me racist if I do this? If it's yes, don't do it. is this thing going to impact someone who is not white in a bad way? If the answer is yes, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And if you choose to do it, my friend, you are racist.
Yes.
That's all it is. So now the soccer team, I know personally, the fact mm-hmm. does not say the N-word. And I'm there and I've heard them. I know the other teams should be saying it and stuff. And, you know, the saddest day on this campus was when I was talking to one of the players on a different team. I'm not going to really expose him because, you know, it's a sore subject, but he was talking mm-hmm. about how, you know, he can't speak up about his teammates saying the N-word. You know, he's isolated in that team as the only black student, black kid.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have, you know, anybody else around him or he doesn't really know that experience. He's like, yeah, I mean, I just kind of let it happen. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. He needs to, you know, fit in to that group. It's, mm-hmm. he has to. So I don't know. It's just a messed up system.
Sorry, if I can continue what I was saying. I'm sorry. If you don't, it's fine. I mean, he's my brother. He knows. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm talking about this, he also has a dish inside. What I was going to say is, yeah, so you have these conversations around us just being black and you not understanding what it means here and as a white person. We talk about the teams. There's a conversation I started, for example, in the basketball team. And today, I'm happy to hear that mm-hmm. people have already made changes regarding that issue. You know, people have sat down and talked about it, you know. Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for white people just running around in the locker room calling us nigger. Are you serious? Are you serious? You know, it didn't make sense to me. So again, going back to my Tembe's point, mm-hmm. this idea of you need to work harder. You know, I remember when I came, I think it was the second mm-hmm. day or third day after orientation, the black guys on campus, who's Africans, African-Americans, they all corrected us and talked to us separately. They told us, mm-hmm. you need to know where you are. In this place, mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 of black guys involved in anything to do with sexual mm-hmm. harassment, sexual anything. Yeah. 9 out of 10 go home. 9 out of 10. The white dudes,
probably less.
6 out of 10, or 5, or probably mm-hmm. less. So you need to know where you are. This is not saying that people should not take seriously sexual harassment or sexual abuse, but it's shining light on mm-hmm. the way people handle issues. People handle mistakes. The way this school somehow normalize, oh, it's a white kid, he didn't know, he will learn. When you are black, mm-hmm. no, he actually meant it. That's actually what he is. That's so disrespectful. They are sent home. So when you come already, so you're talking about the experiences as we live here, we are self-aware that we need to work twice harder. You know, what it means is there are connotations on us already. I know the moment I walk around, the people already assume things on me. So now I need to work twice or three times to make them less fearful, less scared of me. Yeah. So I need to, those are the experiences we live in, you know. I know any black guy I can relate, you know. So these are the experiences we live in. So this idea that you need to work twice harder is because there are already connotations on just you being black. Going back to what the first question, I think this was the first thing that made me say, well, I'm black.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm black.
Thank you very much. Lydia, I wanted to hear from you shortly before we bring this episode to an end. As the only black woman and our guest today, I really want to hear your perspective, and maybe later on in another episode we can go more in depth into, you know, just being how gender plays a role in being black on a PWI. But yeah, if you had anything to add.
Okay, I feel like, I mean, black men, black women, we face racism, right? But sometimes I guess I don't feel as comfortable when I'm talking to a black guy about like the issues I face in regards to colorism, sexism, because it feels like when I say this is what I'm experiencing, like this person said, oh, this is about my skin color, they're like, oh, well, I'm black too, you know, and they quickly shut it down. Whereas when I'm talking to like a black woman, she's a lot more understanding. And I'm not saying all black women on campus are understanding, because there's some that I'm not even gonna come and spill anybody's tea here. But like, for the people that I talk to that are understanding of like where I'm coming from, it's better for me to have those conversations, because we think, like, for a lot of black men too, they're really colorist. Like, you can think from like the people they choose to date, right? Which honestly, I will never shame anybody. Like, interracial relationships, you do you, I'm doing me. Like, but you can see, like, from stuff they even say, you know, like that whole this yellow bone, blah blah blah. But like, you can hear some people when they're talking about, oh, I'm dating a light skin or something, you could see that, oh, it's such a thing of pride, like, wow. It's like, oh, I got an award, I got a job. That's how some men sound. If like, for being honest. So when I'm talking about racism, I just don't like talking about it with black guys the way like I feel comfortable talking about it with black women, because sometimes it even seems like I'm talking to like a white person, because it just feels like they don't understand it as much.
And if I can add on that, I think I hear her. I hear her more. And I think these are the things we get to even learn when we come here. Because like I said, we come from part of the world that are already dealing these issues. You know, colorism is in the world. We experience this even home, when all you see about beauty is these white people, white women in standard, in these magazines here, in the movies. So beauty with white features, you know, all these things go into the subconscious of black people in general. You might even say, okay, let's talk about black women. But I can assure you, if you go even deeper, you'll find that even black guys experience some kind of this thing. Because I can tell you, back home, colorism touches as much as guys and women.
for example, and because I don't need to say what I'm saying, because you find women who tell you that they wish they had, these white guys in the movies they see with their eyes, those eyes and the white, the hair, and the same thing black do. The problem comes when, because the problem that we differentiate is because, you know, beauty, most of the time we talk about beauty is women, which I think is very unfair because men are also beautiful. But this idea that, you know, when it comes to beauty, most people, you know, here are women, because women are the ones to be, you know, the way society is, has shaped these ideologies of, they are the ones to sit and wait until the man comes and everything. So these are the things we need to talk about. And, you know, when we see here, you know, black dudes, you know, pumping their chest because they are with white girls now, or really not, we need to challenge these ideas, you know. And it's a good thing I should bring it up, because if I'm hearing that I'm making my sister or my other, you know, fellow Nigerian feel like this, I should be looking at myself. I think being here, honestly, and dealing with this has shined light on how much I need to work on myself, to be honest with you guys. Like, because, like I said, it has shined me light on me, myself. I see myself as a Burundian. Sometimes I sit with Payla and I say, I am sorry. I can't. Payla is another Burundian girl who's on campus as well. Sometimes I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Now I see what black women in back home go through, because I'm seeing what black men go through here. And I'm like, wow, back home we don't have this, but we have women who are dealing literally the same fundamentals. And I'm like, wow. I can't recall how many times I talked to her and say, I'm really sorry. You know, so it's this conversation we need to talk about them, because they shine light on issues that deal with people in general and not one person or me. Now I'm even looking at the LGBT.
That's a whole other topic.
You know,
that's a whole other topic.
That's not even a topic.
That's a whole other topic.
That's not even a topic. That's a whole other topic.
But yeah, we have come to the end of this particular episode. A big thank you so much to each and every one of you for being on this episode and for just like sharing all your experiences and your thoughts. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can do this again. Thank you to everyone who's listening, and if you enjoyed this episode, let me know, and maybe I will bring Met, Fidan, Lydia, and Alam back again. But yes, next time. Until next time, goodbye everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to join.
Bye. For listening to A Penny and a Peswa. Guest information can be found in the description of today's episode. You can stream other episodes of A Penny and a Peswa on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review of 5 stars. See you on the flip side.
More music on trendybeats.com.